is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to another action-packed edition of Outside the Box. I'm your host, Alex Ansari, joining live February 26, 2009. A lot of information we are going to be discussing this evening. We have several guests join us tonight. In about a half an hour, we will be joined by Rosalind Peterson. She is the webmaster of CaliforniaSkywatch.com, a website that tracks environmental pollution caused by certain jet emissions. What we're going to be talking about specifically tonight are the war game drills taking place off the coast of Washington, Oregon, and California. And we'll talk about the environmental impact of not only sonar, but other things that the Navy will be using. In the first part of the show, we'll be talking with Michael J. Posner. He's a 25-year-old veteran of the global financial markets. We will get to him in just a moment. Let's first go over briefly updates. Military rebirth prompts U.S. response. Pentagon shifting more surface ships and subs to the West Coast. While China's growing clout has garnered worldwide attention in the past decade, it is the Asian nation's military awakening that has Pentagon leaders in Washington gazing warily westward. China has been boosting defense spending by double-digit percentages annually, 17.6% last year, in a bid to modernize its large but relatively low-tech air, ground, and sea forces. Top Pentagon commanders are responding to China's strategies by shifting more surface ships, submarines, and service members from the East Coast to the West Coast. In addition to that, Clinton urges China to keep buying U.S. debt. She says Washington must incur more debt to China to boost the ailing U.S. economy and stimulate demand for Chinese products. She said it would not be in China's interest if the U.S. is unable to get its economy out of a recession. China is the largest holder of U.S. Treasury bonds. Clinton says China's continued investment in U.S. Treasuries is a recognition that the two countries are tied together, saying, and I quote, "We will rise together or fall together." In the next report, 11 states are now declaring sovereignty over Obama's actions. State governors looking down the gun barrel of long-term spending forced on them by the Obama stimulus plan are saying that they will refuse to take the money. This is a constitutional confrontation between the federal government and the states, unlike any other in our time. In another report, Oregon now faces a $3 billion budget gap. The sobering budget news continued in Salem Friday. State economists announced that the legislature is now facing a $3 billion gap for the next budget cycle that starts in July, and that's more than twice as big as they thought just a few months ago. And it means that this is a representation of one-fifth of the current spending levels. It is speculated that this number could soon rise to $5 billion. Many services and programs are about to be cut. Last but not least, before we get to our guest, Oregon beer tax would increase tax on beer by 1,900%. The Oregon state tax on beer is less than a penny a glass right now. It's among the lowest in the nation, untouched in more than three decades and guarded by powerful interest groups. Never before, it seems, has the climate been so ripe to raise taxes on sin. I'm reading from the Oregonian here. Democrats command supermajorities in both chambers, which means they can increase taxes without Republican votes. Kurt Widmer, one of the brothers behind Widmer Brothers Brewing, says the actual tax paid by drinkers will be a lot higher than what the politicians in Salem are claiming. He says instead of it being 15 cents a pint, it's really going to go from $4 to $5.50. Our guest tonight is on the line from Long Island, New York. Michael J. Pazner is a 25-year-old veteran of the global financial markets who has worked in New York and London for HSBC, Soros Funds, ABN AMRO, Dreschner Bank, and J.P. Morgan Chase. He is a New York Institute of Finance faculty member and is the author of multiple books, The New Laws of the Stock Market Jungle, An Insider's Guide to Successful Investing in a Changing World. He's also written When Giants Fall, An Economic Roadmap for the End of the American Era, and Financial Armageddon, which is his website, financialarmageddon.com. Welcome, Michael. Michael, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Thanks for coming on. Tell us a little bit about some of the books you've written.
Well, I haven't always been negative. My first book, in fact, as you mentioned, was an overview of how the world had changed, how stock market trading had changed. But since that time, I noticed a number of different trends, and among them were this tremendous buildup of obligations, this tremendous reliance on leverage and debt, this whole idea that you could speculate and live for today instead of tomorrow. And I think what we're seeing now and over the past couple of years is all of that coming home to roost.
What do you think triggered this current economic meltdown that we're in right now?
Well, I think the thing you have to remember is that there's always been a business cycle. There's always been an up phase and a down phase, just like the seasons. We have spring, summer, fall, winter. So there's nothing unusual about that. But I think what makes it so dramatic bad right now is that I think in Washington and on Wall Street and really around the country, there was this sense that people had got the better of this business cycle, that they could somehow stop it by throwing money at it, by the Federal Reserve flooding the system with credit, by government policymakers changing the rules so that you could borrow more against your home. All of these things came together, and people started to believe that they could sort of beat the system. But all they did really was postpone the day of reckoning and made it much worse, and I think that's what we're seeing unfolding now.
You know, you made a good point there about the Federal Reserve. You know, when you look at the trillions of dollars in bank bailouts and this money being out of thin air, being handed over to the taxpayers, how long do you think that that particular economic policy can be continued and still have a stable functioning society?
Well, I don't think it can be continued. I think what they're doing now is actually making matters worse. In part, I think what we're experiencing is part of a longer-term cycle of decline. We've had 5 decades or more of prosperity and peace in this world, a lot of it having to do with the U.S. role and its military as well as economic strength. But in certain respects, I think the pendulum is swinging the other way. And so we have government using many of the policies that got us here, the sort of imbalances that built up, the excesses, this idea that all it takes is really credit, I guess. And in my mind, at least, it's a sign that down the road we're going to have much more difficult problems and far greater problems, in a sense, because they're not only destroying the currency, but they're creating an environment where people will lose faith in the U.S. generally.
What is your analysis of the G7 meeting that just took place?
Well, I think there's this sense that, again, and I hate to keep harping on about it, maybe you can call it hubris, is this idea that people who are at the leadership levels, whether in the U.S. particularly, or you're talking about the sort of so-called leading nations, this sense that they can solve, quote, solve the problem. But in reality, they can't solve a problem that's been decades in the making. It requires, really, if anything, time. But I think it's somewhat like the general idea that postponing telling somebody the bad news today often has the effect of stretching it out and making it worse when the pain finally comes out. One way or another, the pain is coming. the way governments are acting and responding now, I think they're just guaranteeing that it's going to be a lingering, slow death, and it's going to be much more painful in the end.
Are you familiar with trans researcher Gerald Celente?
Yes, I'm somewhat aware of his work.
He has an interesting analysis on how it could actually manifest as we potentially walk towards a depression. What's your analysis? What's your timeline in looking at this unravel? Because I'm aware that in March, the new numbers are going to come in on how bad 2008 was, and that will further harm the stock market and the U.S. economy at this point, the global economy for that matter.
Well, when I wrote Financial Armageddon in the spring of 2007, it was a sort of peak of euphoria and the sense that we lived in a Goldilocks economy type world. But in fact, as I laid it out in the book back then, I really had it broken down into four chapters, four essential chapters. And the first was economic malaise. Then I foresaw a financial crisis. Then I foresaw depression, which I believe we're in right this moment. And the next phase is hyperinflation. And along with that, it wasn't just a financial book. I think there's some overlap with Mr. Celente's views, but I believe it's going to have social implications and political implications, among them being that there's going to be more unrest, more instability, both within the U.S. and outside of the U.S., you know, all the sorts of things that matter to people, for example, how safe they feel. I think the world is going to become a much more dangerous place. So it's not just about economics, and it's not just about, you know, investing in finances. It's really about the whole sort of, run of your life, I guess, is the way to put it. And in my new book, which has just come out, When Giants Fall, I think that the problem that makes it worse is that you've got the U.S., which is essentially guaranteed peace and has guaranteed an economic system that's benefited the world in general, is really, in my mind at least, deteriorating. And I think at the top of the segment you talked about the Chinese efforts on the military side. Well, actually, I think that's a very important issue. And in fact, there are a number of countries which are building up their capabilities, and all of them are, in my mind, licking their lips for the U.S. and waiting for the chance to sort of step in.
And that's something I'm very concerned about, Michael. Your take on the Chinese economy, their devaluation of their currency, you know, I'm not a fan of what goes on in Washington with the administration, either of them, but Obama asked the Chinese to, you know, let their currency naturally appreciate, which it should do to keep everything balanced and fair, but they're artificially keeping it low to maintain a certain level of exports because they're having already unrest, already riots, thousands of them, many of them unreported to China. The CCP has a cap on some of that info getting out. So we're aware that this is becoming a growing issue. So what is your take on the Chinese currency?
Well, I think that anyone who expects the Chinese or many other countries, for that matter, to be fair and balanced in their policies for their interaction with the rest of the world is somewhat deluding themselves. They actually haven't been very fair for years, and as a result, they've benefited from a system that you know, allowed them to export and accumulate large reserves. Because they've been able to manipulate their exchange rate and because they've been able to exercise a great deal of control over what happens in their economy. But there's no doubt that what's started in the U.S. and is now fed to the rest of the world, a fairly broad-based economic downturn, is going to hurt everybody, including the Chinese. Now, the risk there, and if you look at history, it's not it's not unusual and it's not a rare one. The risks are that instability in that country could cause all sorts of other kinds of second-order effects. I mean, for example, the Chinese may find themselves in such a box that they feel starting a conflict with another nation, whoever that might be, is a good way to divert attentions away and to rally nationalistic spirits, because people are upset about economic circumstances. So there is that vulnerability and that risk in my mind. But in the day, I think that the Chinese are somewhat better positioned in some respects than the United States is, and that the U.S. in particular, people are not used to a world where we're not moving forward economically, and it could be much more dramatic here for Americans, the downturn, than it would be for, say, the Chinese.
It would be probably also wise to bring up the fact that the Chinese government, their banks are doing really well right now, just not the people. There's definitely a major gap between the have and have-nots there, and the Chinese banking system is definitely positioned right now, from what I understand, to loan money out to all these different countries, which thus, based on the interest payments, is going to make them even wealthier. So they're definitely situated to gain from this meltdown that's probably going to hit the U.S. more than some other places. But what is your take on Russia, which is also linking themselves more and more economically and militarily with China right now?
Well, I mean, there's clearly all sorts of scrambling going on. I think there's a widespread sense, and it's what I talk about in the new book, but there's a widespread sense that, you know, the global order is changing, and there are people who are setting up alliances in anticipation of that. And you mentioned Russia and China. I mean, historically, they haven't been the best of pals, but they have been doing a number of things together, having war games. They've had war games on Russian soil. They've had war games on Chinese territory. And the same goes for other countries in other parts of the world. There's a sense that people are jockeying for position, and they're preparing for a different kind of a structure going forward. I think the days of the sort of unipolar world, or as people call it, or the sort of sole superpower, if you want to put it in those terms, the American empire, are really fading, and the rest of the world is getting ready to sort of get their share of the spoil. So certainly I think that issue is a real one. Russia has made it pretty clear about their ambitions, that they don't like the system as it is, the global system, that they want to play by the U.S. and Western rules. They, of course, are hurting right now because of the sort of weakness in commodity prices, but I don't expect that to last. And the other thing that's quite important about a country like Russia or China, when you get a sort of economic downturn like they're seeing, because they are, in essence, authoritarian regimes, they don't have a problem making their citizens suffer so they can keep spending money on defense. In the U.S., on the other hand, being a sort of democratic country, being driven by the will of the people, it's going to be much harder for governments to make those kinds of decisions. So militarily, we could suffer much more dramatically in an economic downturn than other countries, even though we're larger than they are.
What are some of the social implications that you foresee if this continues to unravel the way that it is?
Well, it's not too hard to figure out. I think anybody who's been paying attention to what's going on in Europe, for example, we had, starting at the end of last year in December, we had a series of riots and protests in Greece. But slowly but surely, it's been steadily spreading throughout Europe. Eastern Europe is in a very precarious situation right now. You've just recently had the sort of fall of the Latvian government. But really, that's just a reflection of a broader problem. You've had marches. You've had general strikes. You've had protests against foreigners getting jobs. You've had pressure for protectionism. You've had and violence. And in a sense, that sort of social instability, in my view, is coming here. In some respects, I think people still believe, or at least they're holding on there in hope, that the U.S. will figure a way out of this, that our policymakers who sort of played the game for a couple of decades will solve the problem like they claim they can. But I think over time, as they realize that the problems here are actually not getting better but are getting worse, you're going to see a similar sort of unrest. And frankly, what I tell people is look over to Europe, because it's coming here.
What's your take on these announcements about the military getting ready to possibly deal with the American public? There's multiple Army War College reports from the Army Times, sites that aren't alternative sites where they're admitting some of these things and concerns.
Well, there's a number of issues here. I mean, you know, I in fact, in Financial Armageddon and even in the new book, I make it clear that there's a real risk in the United States of martial law, if things get out of hand. Now, people originally thought that was crazy. I mean, that whole notion that in the country sort of stood up for freedom. But, you know, I think as you sort of made reference to, there's been a steady deterioration of civil rights. There's been all sorts of preparation going on in anticipation of the possibility of unrest, of even a rebellion. But aside from that, you've got other pressures. I mean, anybody who's been watching what's going on in Mexico should really be truly frightened. I mean, there's an essence there that the state is in serious trouble. Foreign policy analyst suggested that it's going to be the potentially the next Lebanon. So you open up that can of worms just south of our border, and it creates additional problems, and it could lead to serious instability in the southern half of the country. So there's a lot of brewing pressures, and historically, if you look back, it's not so unusual to see a circumstance where you've had a boom time and a period of great cooperation. The pendulum swings the other way, and with it comes a real shift in the social mood, a real mood of anger and a real mood of bitterness and a sense that our people have had enough and they're going to do something about it.
In this last 10-minute segment I have with you, Michael, I want to ask you a two-part question. The first part, for those with money, what should they do with it? And then the second question, when we get done with that, is for those that don't have any money or any assets, what should they be doing to prepare for the future? But back to the first question, for those with money, is your suggestion gold, like many other investors are recommending, or is it some stocks? What are you seeing?
Well, I think we're still, in the very short term, still playing out some of the forces of the deflationary forces that I noted previously. One of the issues you have when this with this big tremendous buildup of credit that we've had is that there's been a number of people, individuals, companies, governments for that matter, state level, you can see it out west for sure, but really around the country, and it creates tremendous downside pressure on all sorts of assets. And real estate, clearly we've seen the bubble burst there, but generally speaking, it adds, whether you're talking about sort of traded assets like stocks and bonds or whether you're talking about other kinds of goods, the economy as a whole, there tends to be a sort of downward pressure on prices. But I think that they're coming near to the end of that, and it suggests that your strategy should be taking that into account. In the near term, I think there's a possibility that you can buy a lot of things cheaper in, say, 3 to 6 months' time than you can now. That's the first thing. But longer term, my view is that much of the actions the government is taking right now to try and, quote, solve the situation are laying the groundwork for a fairly severe inflation going forward. In fact, like I said, my last book referred to hyperinflation, which is you're talking on the order of sort of triple-digit rates or higher. And that implications of that, and one of the recommendations I have for the longer term is that precious metals are going to be a haven. Do I think you should buy precious metals now? I think there's a chance that in the short run you could see some of this recent overheating come out of the market and see the price drop. But longer term, I think it's a good strategic investment.
And for those listening that don't have anything to invest, they're concerned about the future and losing their jobs, and they're wondering, shoot, if things melt down, should I get off the grid? I'll tell you, Michael, a lot of people are asking those questions. So in terms of those concerns, how do you address that?
Well, it's a fair point, and it's not only just economic matters. I mean, I address the sort of whole issue with, you know, resource-related constraints in terms of energy and food and water. I think whether you have money now or whether you don't have money now, in both cases, it's going to require a serious reassessment of lifestyles. I think you have to change your perspective on what the world's going to look like. There's going to be some difficult situations in certain parts of the country, for example, that are very dependent on automobiles and very dependent on gasoline and oil and various energy-related products. Water is going to become an issue. I saw a report today suggesting that Las Vegas has some serious issues with the falling water table, I think, coming out of Lake Mead. And that water is also tied into California in some ways. And in essence, any more of a drop-off and you're going to create a serious drought condition. Water, in my mind, it could, and it's not my original thought, but I certainly believe it could be the oil of the next century in terms of its value and its the ability to find it when you need it. So those are considerations that people are going to have to take into account in America, which they haven't had before. I mean, the other side of this is to realize that this sort of consumer age, this idea that that you could sort of live expansively forever, in my opinion anyway, is over, and people will have to adjust. They will have to take on less debt, pay it down. They have to think about alternatives. There's going to be a number of businesses closing down and moving because of various economic and resource-related forces. And so, in a way, it really requires an attitude adjustment, whether you have money or you don't, that Americans are not used to.
You mentioned on Coast to Coast AM last week about, you know, kind of being laughed at maybe a couple of years ago because disinformation seemed a little bit extreme, you know, or scoffed at. Could you talk to that? Because a lot of us feel the same way when we're trying to talk to the people around us. A lot of people email me and say, Alex, I try to talk about some of the stuff that you talk about, and I get laughed at by my parents and by my significant other because they believe that our way of life is going to change. How do you address that, whether you look at it in terms of advice for some of these individuals, or how have you dealt with some of this?
Well, the thing you have to remember, and we're seeing it even now in Washington, is that from the very beginning of this whole crisis, policymakers, central bankers, the administration, obviously we've had a change in the administration, but there has been a constant sense of denial. There's been a constant sense of trying to talk happy talk. Most of the sort of Wall Street community completely missed the boat. The point I would make now is even recently, Bernanke, the Fed chairman, was testifying, suggesting that there's a light at the end of the tunnel and that the economy is going to recover probably next year. In my view, they've been wrong for at least 2 years. Well, actually, you could make the case they've been wrong for decades, but they've been wrong for at least 2 years about the extent of the crisis and what was going to happen next. So anybody who argues that those people know what's going on and that others who actually have called it right don't is really not paying attention and is really being somewhat delusional. So clearly the thing to remember here is if Washington tells you something now, it's more likely to be a spin and a message of hope, a kind of a Hail Mary pass effort, as opposed to a realistic message that people need to pay attention to.
Well, Michael, I appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything you'd like to take us out with, any more information that somebody might want to know about this economic meltdown or your book for that matter?
Sure. Well, I mean, I operate two blogs. The first was set up a couple of years ago. It's financialarmageddon.com. The other is more recent, economicroadmap.com. Both together give a perspective that I try to talk about what the mainstream's not talking about. I have lots of resources there to other blogs, to other websites, to alternative media that really can give you a much broader picture. So if people are looking for sort of a day-to-day kind of keeping tabs on what's going on, that's a place to start.
Well, Michael, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the air and talk about these very important subjects.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we will talk to you next time. Thank you, Michael. And again, his website is?
financialarmageddon.com and economicroadmap.com.
Fantastic. Take care, sir. And that is Michael. He is living on the East Coast in Long Island. My mother actually lives in New York City, Upper West Side. Sometimes I don't know why, but, you know, she's confident that things are going to be just fine. But I'm concerned about people that live in dense population zones at this point in time. Before we talk to Rosalind, I'm going to kind of go over some of these reports pertaining to the Navy. And there's only a couple reports that have been published on the story. Here's one I hold it in my hand from the Oregonian. Navy launches tug-of-war. This is from February 5th, 2009. Okay. You're looking at Washington being involved, Oregon being involved, and California being involved. They're going to increase the number of missiles fired by 470%. They're going to increase the naval gun shells by 106%. Machine gun rounds, increase that by 100%. A lot more sonar. They're going to even be dropping off bombs. They'll be engaged in counter-surveillance operations. This is from the Oregonian. You may not realize it, but the Navy has been conducting warfare training exercises off the coast of Oregon, Washington, and Northern California for decades, firing missiles and machine guns, dropping bombs, and seeing crucial sonar detection of submarines. Now the Navy's Northwest region wants to expand those operations, including adding a dummy minefield avoidance training course, scheduling hundreds of more training flights and warfare simulations over land and sea. Again, over land and sea. See, in the Navy's proposal, they're not going to be doing this stuff 12 miles from the coastline. They have all the area that they want. And they told the people a couple days prior, oh yeah, this is where the median's going to be. You know, some small town magazine, small town paper, publication. And so you only have about 40 people show up, all of which only a few people could even talk and voice their opinions. And so this is what we talked about a couple weeks ago. Continuing on with this report, environmental groups, fishermen, and some politicians along Oregon's coast are wary. They say that the military sprang the 1,000-page environmental review of its training plan with little notice. They just kind of, you know, yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's your 1,000-page document. Hope you can read it in 2 days' time. Good luck. 1,000 pages. Are you kidding me? So keep this in the proper perspective. Oh, if the Navy has nothing to hide, why are they choosing to hide everything? The Navy held one Oregon meeting on the draft proposal last week, and comments are due Wednesday, but activists on a 30-day extension. Well, we're going to be talking about a deadline to call in and voice your opinion and another meeting that might be coming up on 3/11. But instead of going on and on in this report, I recommend that you get online and read it. Google Navy launches tug of war, but that article really does not compare with article written by Rosalind Peterson. It's also published at our website, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com and NewsWithViews.com. She's written a lot of articles about a variety of environmental issues that most people aren't aware of. NewsWithViews.com is the website. But a little bit about Rosalind, who's on the line from California. She's the webmaster of CaliforniaSkyWatch.com, a website that tracks environmental pollution caused by certain jet emissions, also known to some people as chemtrails. Between 1989 and 1993, Rosalind worked as an agricultural technologist for the Mendocino County Department of Agriculture, that's down in California. After leaving the county, she took a position with the USDA Farm Service Agency as a program assistant in Mendocino, Sonoma, and the Salinas County offices. She's quite the bio. In 1995, she became a certified USDA Farm Service Agency crop loss adjuster, working in 10 counties throughout California. Many crop losses throughout the state can be attributed to weather-related causes. According to Rosalind, she has a BA degree from Sonoma State University in Environmental Studies and Planning, with emphasis on agriculture, watersheds, climate, and crop production. Welcome, Rosalind.
Well, thank you for having me on the show tonight.
Well, I had you on the other show the other day, OracleBroadcasting.com, and I thought that this is a local issue, and this is important, and I understand you have a deadline coming up, so we have to get this message out. I'm going to give you the floor, Rosalind. What are we looking at here with the environmental threat to our land as a result of this war game drill?
Well, what they're doing is the Navy has decided to expand its thrust range, which originated in Washington, and they moved in 2006 down to the coast of Oregon, and then now they're moving the range wider to encompass Northern California, all of the state of Oregon, all of the state of Washington, and the state of Idaho. And their plans are to test future and current warfare systems. That means dropping bombs from airplanes into the ocean along the Pacific. That means that they're going to be testing, in other words, we're going to have sonic booms overhead, which actually the booms get so bad, we experienced them here in California many years ago, that they cracked the foundations and the walls of the houses. So we asked the United States Air Force to stop at one point because it was absolutely just driving the population crazy here and starting to damage property, and so they did. But now the Navy has picked up on this, and they're going to test electronic warfare systems, surveillance systems. They're going to be using depleted uranium and titanium. They're going to be using white and red phosphorus, which are highly toxic chemicals. So they're going to be testing all the weapons of war. The nuclear submarines are going to be here with us, and they're going to be doing, in other words, underwater demolitions. They're going to be flying over us. The tests are quite numerous. The chemicals that they're going to use are quite numerous. And they have given us only until March 11th to make a public comment about their program.
Okay, let's get that number out. I'm sure there's many people that are going to need to write that down and hear it once. Do you have that with you?
The number to call their elected officials?
So they want to call all their local officials, the local, our own, like, Wyden and people here local if we're in Portland, things of that nature?
Well, what, if you want to call them in Washington, D.C., free of charge, the number is 1-866-22-0044, and that number is good from any state to Washington, D.C., and you can ask to speak to any elected representative at any time, 24 hours a day. Number, you can leave messages, and you can ask to talk to any senator or any congressman in Washington, D.C. free of charge. And we're encouraging everybody to contact their elected officials and let them know how you feel about the project. Now, the EIS, the Environmental Impact Statement, is at www.NWTRANGECOMPLEXEIS.com.
Or you can go to CaliforniaSkywatch.com, and I'm sure you've got some info.
Yes, I have an article. I've written an article, and it's on newswithviews.com, plus the links to the EIS and the comment form are on my website. And that's CaliforniaSkywatch.com.
Thousand-page document.
And you click on the Navy emblem.
Thousand-page document, Rosalind. How's someone supposed to read that? Just there, 1,000 pages. Just hope you can take some good notes in the next couple of days.
Well, you can download it, but the print is real small. And I can tell you it takes a long time to read because of all the detail that it goes into about all the things they're going to be doing. And it talks about harm to marine life. And then it says, well, you know, it's sort of okay. They tell you that they're going to be using these chemicals, but it's okay. They're going to tell you that there's, in other words, there will be unexploded bombs that don't work, and they will lay on the bottom of the ocean. They become a chemical contamination problem. So there's all kinds of things. Some fishermen lost their life when their nets got caught in the submarine along the Argonian coast during some of their maneuvers. The submarine wasn't damaged, but the fishermen lost their lives. So there's lots of things going on, and this is our food supply. This is this is the whales. This is they're going to fly over land. They're going to be testing things on us, and the chemicals that they're using are going to blow onto the land, and they're going to contaminate our air and our water supplies and our soils. So this is not benign. Anywhere the Navy has ever tested, they have left behind a polluted mess. And so what you have to know is that we need to stop the program, and we need to call our elected officials and demand that they extend the deadline, have more hearings, and that our elected officials are going to have to take a position. Either they're going to protect us from this program and the Pacific Ocean, or they are supporting it, and there's no middle ground.
There really is no middle ground on this particular issue, because there doesn't seem to be any real oversight. I mean, most people don't even know about this. That's what's really, really disturbing, that they just don't even seem to know.
Well, the Navy was quite sharp. I can tell you that public relations is tremendous. What they did is they put notices in the smallest towns. There's, you know, Northern California is a large place, and what they did is they picked one small library to send up an environmental impact statement to, only had one hearing for all of Northern California, and they never, our elected officials, who were all notified, by the way, with a CD and a letter, never elected to say to us that they were going to be doing this program. They kept dead silent. So they actually acquiesced in the beginning because they failed to inform us of the program. And then the Navy said, well, we're only going to hold hearings in tiny little towns with small populations, and we're not going to advertise in any but the smallest papers that we can find, and we're going to make the notices about an inch by an inch in size. So that was notification. So a lot of people don't know, still don't know, and they had to be at the right place with the right newspaper looking at an ad.
Well, this Oregonian has a lot of facts in it, but there's still a lot of questions that I have.
Oh, a lot.
Rosalyn mentioned electromagnetic weapons. We've talked a lot about that, military testing, a lot of creepy stuff, even local police departments having possession of some of these lethal technologies that they call non-lethal. What do we know about it from this report, about that particular type of weaponry that they might be using, testing?
Well, they don't tell you. They just tell you that they're going to be doing this type of testing, but they don't tell you what it is, how long it's going to last. They give you absolutely no information, and then they tell you it's safe, but they don't give you anywhere to reference the studies and the research to say it's safe. And the interesting thing about this program is that it has no end date. Once the public comment period closes on March 11th, there will be absolutely no more time. We've run out of time to comment, and the program will just start because what they're going to do is they shut it down, and then they're going to start the bombs rolling, and they're going to start the detonations. They're not going to wait, because at that point they believe that no one can stop them.
They're going to be rocking and rolling all night long.
Yes, these are 24/7 tests, and they're going to be flying overhead. As a matter of fact, the citizens of Idaho, not only were their elected officials not notified, according to the Department of the Navy, but they didn't even bother to hold any hearings for the citizens of that state. So, besides California, I think that they're probably, as far as I can tell, were maybe half a dozen people or a dozen people that actually knew. But the elected officials knew, all right, and elected not to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a friend that used to crew on the show, and she liked to go out and see the whales, the orcas, and go on these particular trips. It's something real special to her, and she was saying in recent years they haven't even been around. it's been hard to see them, and for some people, it's a big thing to go and see the whales. Some people feel a spiritual connection to, you know, that form of sea life. So it's disturbing. I've already read many reports about dolphins washing up on the shore in Texas. It's strange how they say that, you know, what's going on out there does not affect humans. It says right here, training, plan won't be harmful, draft statement says. Well, it doesn't really look like that's the case. It looks like it could be very harmful to humans.
Oh, yes. And they admit within the draft EIS that there will be, in other words, there will be loss of marine life and that there will be problems. But then they say, well, yes, but that's to be expected because, we're doing testing. And so therefore, that it's justified because they're doing testing. And I disagree with that. And I think that if you can read the articles by Carol Von Thrum in Oregon, she's written three wonderful articles which are posted on my website, and they're all about Oregon and what's happening on the Oregon coast. And Carol is a published author. She wrote Bitter Fog several years ago. Actually, she's a hero of mine from 20 years ago. But she wrote Bitter Fog, and if you go to my website and look up her articles, you will find three really good ones that talk about what's been happening on the Oregonian coast and also what the Navy has been pulling, and how the people have had to mobilize in spite of this to try and stop this program.
Rosalyn, I want to thank you for coming on. That's a lot of information in just a short span of time. I want people to go look at your website, CaliforniaSkyWatch.com. I want you guys to go take a look at the information, take a look at her report, and call your local representatives. And there are people watching this show online in Washington and California outside of Oregon. So contact your local representatives there. And even if they aren't your local representatives, I say call those representatives in those districts near the coast anyway and let them know that there are people watching that don't approve of this lack of oversight, and you have to let your voice be your weapon of choice. Otherwise, they're not going to hear your voice. They're not going to hear your cry. They're not going to hear your demands for accountability. So, Rosalyn, any other piece of information you want to add to this before we let you go?
Yes, there's one piece I would like to add. If we all join together and we work together, we can put a stop to this. But it means that the people have to stand, draw a line in the sand, and say no more. And I think that we're at this point. Otherwise, this will be never-ending project that will get larger and larger with each succeeding year. And I think that we even have to contact the President of the United States and the press and the media all over and let them know what's happening to us in these four states.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rosalyn, for coming on and giving us that info.
Okay, and thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome. I'm glad we were able to cover this story. I was like, I'm going to have two guests on one show. I haven't done that in a while. We'll see how it goes. And now we are going to conclude the broadcast with a number of very important headlines. We'll maybe take two phone calls to brief at 503-288-4442 or 503-288-4448. And by the way, we have a very special guest. It's going to be coming on next week. It's going to be interesting. You might want to Google the name Pastor or Reverend Manning into YouTube, and you're going to find some very interesting videos. We're going to be talking with a reverend from Harlem, New York, and he is going to be using his voice as his weapon of choice, discussing the Obama administration and some stuff that a lot of people aren't aware of when it comes to not just the person, but some of the others that are around him. So it's going to be my pleasure to have him on the show. Britain faces summer of rage, according to the police. Britain's most senior police officer with responsibility for public order raised the specter of a return of the riots of the 1980s, with people who have lost their jobs, homes, or savings becoming foot soldiers in a wave of potentially violent mass protests. They're getting ready for you guys to be really pissed off. I wonder why. They're getting ready for unprecedented rage. But the people on TV, Glenn Beck with the martial law segments, War Room, What Happens If, What's the Plan B, with a little graphic of the troops enacting martial law, marching through a neighborhood. But they don't ask why, how this economic crisis got this bad without anybody saying anything.
And they're not giving you all the information as to why martial law is being prepared. I mean, they have so many excuses for it. We have fear of bird flu, fear of a terrorist attack, fear of a economic crisis, fear of the grid going down with sunspot cycle 24 and a weakened magnetic field. So many different scenarios. But the question is, why have they been training to do this for multiple decades? Multiple decades. Looking at Oakland, California in the mid-1990s. People from San Francisco being marched into a camp. This stuff really happened. These preparations really were made a very long time ago. And then you look back at 1984 and you look at Rex 84 and what was going on then. They were preparing for the collapse of Mexico and an influx of immigrants coming to the country and having to put them into camps. So they've been practicing for some time. Guardsmen to conduct urban training at Arcadia in April. So this stuff's happening all over, folks. Small towns. We aren't going to say much. This is happening. It's towns of like, this is a town of 450 people. And no one's complaining, apparently. The Carroll National Guard Unit is going to train on urban military operations by holding a four-day exercise at Arcadia. It's going to be between the 2nd and 5th of April. It's going to be to gather intelligence. According to the sergeant in charge, citizens, law enforcement, media, and other supporters will participate. Soldiers will knock on households that have agreed to participate in the drill. And what's the drill about? They're looking for the person who's arming the neighborhood. They're looking to apprehend the suspected arms dealer. The unit will use a Black Hawk helicopter for overhead command and control and to simulate other things as well, moving in, moving out. Those what those MH6 choppers that came to Portland can do. They're a smaller model, though, than the Black Hawk helicopter, which is a fairly larger, more durable chopper. The MH6 is a very lightweight, be easily damaged. That's why it's important to have an expert pilot wing. And we have a phone call. When we come back from that phone call, we'll talk about some of the new photo evidence that's been provided by Stephen Quayle, showing his troops marching in Hayden, Idaho. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, hi, Alex. This is Barrett.
Hi.
What was that phone number to call to?
I don't have that for you. You need to go and Google it online. We weren't able to get that out. She did mention it, but I don't have it memorized. But you can find that at CaliforniaSkywatch.com. So, Barrett, just go online to get that.
Okay. I also had a question, comment, too, as well about the Chinese economy.
Yeah, go ahead.
I always thought the last few years that since we're getting, like, it seems to me like 90% of everything in this country is from China.
Yeah, and it's going to continue to grow, we're also going to see more Chinese in the United States.
And then their dollar
was
getting more powerful as all the other money of the world was pretty much depleting. I thought that's what was going on, but I guess what's happening there is the same thing that's happening here.
It's amazing, Barrett. I want to thank you for your call. I don't mean to cut you short, but I'm going to cover the rest of the reports. We got to keep our eye on China, and I'm going to do my best each week to bring you a couple guests or a guest and cover the news, but you'll have to find more at alexhansery.com, and we'll get to that caller in 2 minutes' time. Photo evidence, soldiers marching in Hayden, Idaho. This is from Steve Bell. My son-in-law today saw about 20 Army guys with combat gear walking down the street in Hayden, Idaho. He took some pictures and asked them what they were doing. They said they were just training. One of the troopers was carrying a saw or a squad automatic weapon. Is this just training, or is it getting people used to seeing troops patrolling the streets? And I've also heard a report about something in Roseburg, Oregon. There's a report, someone made a YouTube video saying that this stuff's actually happening down there as well. We're hearing more reports about the stuff popping up in small towns unannounced. Here we look at Boy Scouts of America. They're partnering with the Department of Homeland Security's Readiness Program, which is not surprising. Now, where's the bailout money? Militarizing police departments with your bailout money. If you actually follow the money, you're going to find out that a lot of this is going towards SWAT. Non-lethal weapons. In the next report, U.S. Army to buy $6 million of riot equipment. The U.S. Army contracting agency based at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, has a post on the Federal Business Opportunities website requesting the equipment, and they have received several notices of interest from potential vendors. The request titled 84 riot equipment.
So it reminds me of Rec City Forum. A4 Right Equipment is the name of the request, outlining the need for hard chin and chest guards, shock-absorbing forearm protectors, interior leg brace supports, as well as knee and ankle protectors. The ACA asks that the equipment be able to safely withstand a substantial blow from non-ballistic weapons or flying debris. One more report after this phone call, and we will say goodnight. Hello.
Go ahead, caller.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Oregonian, what date was that? I was listening to you, and that was the one thing I
didn't get. That report's February 5th, 2009.
Okay.
Navy engages in tug-of-war. I don't know if I have that on my site right now. I will try to get it on tonight when I get home.
Okay.
If you go to CaliforniaSkywatch.com, that's Rosalind's website, she's got hopefully a link to that. You can also go to MediaMonarchy.com. My friend James over there, great website, has archived it.
Okay.
And so if you Google it, you're only going to find a couple articles. That's what's very interesting about it. Only maybe three or four papers wrote about it.
I'm interested, and I'm spending the next month up in Washington, so it really caught my ear. So.
Well, check out the show online while you're there.
Definitely.
AlexAnsory.com. Thank you for watching.
Thanks, Alex.
Last couple reports. Army preparing to test future combat systems. That's the robotic army. You know, I can see them swarming down from space.
Oh, they're here to help us. Resistance jetway into the camps. Do not resist. Humans, do not resist. Taking place in White Sands Missile Range, New Mexico. Soldiers and civilians with the Future Combat Systems Program at White Sands Missile Range are working overtime, preparing to put future Army technology to the test, but guess what? There's a problem! China can hack into our robotic army. They've got the codes. Some of the codes developed by the Chinese. In fact, they can even take over our computers like that. Pay attention to what's going on with China. Interest in our own country, looking to buy up whole plots of land. I've given you information. Here's another one. Rare fungal disease migrates to Oregon and Washington. It's killed 19 in Canada. It's migrated to Oregon and Washington, or it's linked to 5 deaths since 2004. The pathogen fungus, let's see if I can enunciate this correctly, Cryptococcus gatti, lives in the northwest trees, such as the Douglas fir, as well as soil and water. They don't need to start wearing face masks while hiking in the woods. But they are nonetheless concerned about the spread of a tropical region. I just want to make sure you're aware of that. The reason I give you so much information is because I have faith in you. I have faith in my audience. I know that, some of this information is really hard-hitting, really action-packed, really intense. But you have the cognitive ability to take what you want and leave the rest. So I've got a variety of guests, like I will next week with Pastor Manning. And that's going to be very, very interesting. But remember, what we have going for us is this land of information that's flowing like a river. And we can't forget that. They want us, the New World Order, that is, to believe in our downfall. We cannot even know our own power. And that's how they get control of us. When you unplug from that matrix and realize you're powerful, then you have a chance at actually beating the system and overcoming these challenges. So until next week, I'm Alex Anser, reminding you that the path to the ultimate truth still starts within. Good night.